Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to a special edition of the Wombat Sports Podcast here on blogtalkradio.com, also wombatsports.com, and gofightlive.tv. I'm Mark McHugh, I'm your host. I'm very privileged to have the second part of an interview I did with Dr. Alex Channon. Dr. Alex Channon, along with his colleague Dr. Christopher Matthews, compiled research and published Global Perspectives on Women in Combat Sports, Women Warriors Around the World. The book looks into why women are starting to be accepted at these sports and the hurdles that are facing in the sports as it grows globally. We did part one earlier this week, this past Sunday. You guys can check that out at wombatsports.com, or you guys can check that out on blogtalkradio.com/wombatsports. And in that portion of it, we discussed about the book, motivations for the women taking up fighting and women training in the gym, and how they got to that point of acceptance and participating in fighting. Well, in part two, we're about to play for you, we discuss the book, and we discuss the marketing of female fighting, how technology has helped expand the acceptance of female fighting, and the expansion of the sport globally, and why MMA seems to be leading the way in getting women accepted in other combat sports across the board. You can follow Dr. Channon on Twitter at Dr. Alex Channon. That's DralexChannon. That's DralexChannon. Or Google his name to read more of his research, and you can find where you can purchase his book. And this is going to be a very interesting interview, especially considering we talk a lot about the marketing of women in terms of the sport, especially right on off the bat. So here we go. Part two of my interview with Dr. Alex Channon.
So over the past decade, we've seen so many campaigns now, especially the past couple years, we've seen campaigns for women's equality and in men-dominated areas, be it STEM research or STEM in general, male in combat and sports in general as well. We're seeing a lot of campaigns in which they want. We're seeing women, you know, wanting to have that level playing field, and we've seen it over the past couple of years. Well, we've had several different campaigns to kind of focus on that as well. And I think we're at a turning point earlier this decade, even maybe 10 years ago, at which once the turn of the century happened, it just seemed like this is going to be the next 100 years of the woman, and we're seeing a lot of women, you know, kind of take on big challenges and kind of change up the roles that they are in society as well. So just overall impact in terms of them as well, I think, is another thing that we need to point out as well. Great to be able to see that as well, and you never want to tell a woman she can't do something because she'll prove you wrong.
Yeah, definitely.
And a lot of them did. A lot of people did prove it as well. Kind of an interesting thing that I want to talk about in terms of this the current resurgence is how women are marketed. I don't know if you've seen, but that there was a really interesting TED Talk by Nicole Lavoie, who's a professor at the University of Minnesota. And she talked a lot about how women are marketed in sports and, you know, them using more of their sexuality than they are their athleticism in terms of this sport. We've seen this a lot with people like Paige VanZant and Ronda Rousey, where, you know, a lot of times they'll use their looks over their athleticism to market items and et cetera, et cetera. Can you talk a little bit about that as well? I think that's a really huge aspect right now. It's probably the big keynote kind of thing right now in terms of the sport. The biggest argument is, you know, there's a lot of girls out there that are competing that are absolutely great, but the problem is that they don't look the part, as it were. But can you talk a little bit about the sports marketing and how that's kind of playing into combat sports right now?
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, I'm really glad you brought this up. This is another thing that I'm very interested in from my own research perspective. I'm familiar with Nicole Lavoie. I haven't seen that TED Talk, but yeah, I've read some of her other work, and there's quite a few sociology professors, researchers in the sociology of sport who are very interested in this particular problem. And it's been, well, I'd say it's been since the 1980s. This has been part of the academic dialogue on women's sport. You know, this idea that you can only really promote women's sport through playing up their sexuality, particularly playing up their heterosexual attractiveness to men. On the assumption, of course, that only men are interested in buying sport-related things, and the only reason that men would care about women's sport is because female athletes are sexy, and there's that kind of implied sexuality of what goes on in the locker room, and all that kind of stuff that really in many ways, I think those kind of ideas diminishes the value of women's sport. It reduces it to being just this thing that's there to sexually titillate men. It's not really about, as you say, athleticism. It's all about, you know, almost like a kind of softcore porn, which is really quite disappointing when you think about just how talented many of these female athletes are. And certainly, you know, Paige VanZant, fantastic fighter, Ronda Rousey, incredible. And this shouldn't be part of the discussion about them, but sadly it is, you know, because they are being, you know, they do have that aspect to them. And I think the key argument here, the key feminist argument that sort of surfaces around this problem is that, you know, it might be all well and good for those individual women that they get more media exposure, they get more sponsorship money, they get more attention, and they draw, you know, potentially draw more interest to the sport in a sense. What's going on is that we're continuing to value this quite restrictive image of femininity that says, if you're a woman, you can only really be valuable in the public eye if you're attractive in this particular way. So, you know, you've got to be relatively skinny and you've got to have a, you know, certain good looks and long hair and so on and so on. And of course, not all women look like that. Not all women want to look like that. Not all women are happy to market themselves in those ways. So this might be a good thing for some women, the Ronda Rouseys, the Paige VanZants, and, you know, beyond combat sports, Anna Konnikova was very, very famous for these reasons. But, you know, women who don't want that and who don't look like that, they're frozen out of that kind of those opportunities. And so it's the message that it sends to men, of course, but also to young girls, that's a problem for some feminist academics, that it's sending out the wrong kind of message, really. We're not doing what we should be doing. We're not using the opportunity for these powerful women to send out a message that's much more empowering to young girls. Now, what complicates matters, particularly when it comes to Ronda Rousey, is that, you know, she is by no means just famous for her looks or just famous for her photo shoots. She is an exceptionally talented fighter, and nobody's denying that. So it can be quite a simplistic criticism sometimes to say, you know, this kind of sexualization of female athletes is always bad, because at the same time as someone like Rousey is sexy, she's also extremely powerful, and a lot of young women can relate to her in a way that she kind of claims her sexuality and she owns it in public and does it almost, you know, well, very clearly on her own terms. So there's something maybe positive about that, as well as being, you know, part of something that we might want to criticize. So I do think it's a really interesting area. It's a difficult philosophical one, and I don't think it's one that we've really, that academia has really resolved, if I'm being perfectly honest. So yeah, a bit of a long answer there, but I think it's a fascinating topic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't blame Rousey. I mean, obviously you can't blame Rousey for her looks and her abilities inside the cage. I mean, both are really, really great. She's done very well for herself. She's a very successful individual. Same thing with Paige VanZant. She's very successful. She's a very talented individual as well. I think the prime example of the other end of the spectrum is kind of Cyborg, who is not traditionally, you know, the atypical, you know, model type kind of woman, but she's just as dominant in the sport and has not gotten that respect. And I mean, a lot of people kind of contribute that to the fact that she's Brazilian, so her English isn't the greatest in the world. But the other portion of that is that she's not the traditionally good looking person. You know, not to say anything bad to Chris, who I personally know, who's a really good individual and a very nice person in person. If you ever meet her,
but
I mean, there was an argument. I mean, I guess the biggest example of this was somebody was arguing about, you know, Ronda being the thing that kind of catapulted women's martial arts into the phenomenon that it was. And I was like going, you know, well, it's great for Ronda, and you know, she was at the right place at the right time. But if Gina Carano would have beaten Cyborg, I think it would have happened sooner. Gina Carano obviously has the looks and all that as well. I think when Cyborg defeated her, that kind of set things back a little bit. But that's all because of what that perception is that, oh, we have to have a pretty girl at top of the ladder. Again, I'm not blaming anyone in terms of their skills for that. I'm just, you know, it's just interesting to see how society is perceiving that. Another thing that kind of is referenced in your book, there was somebody who wrote a paper on The Ultimate Fighter 20. There was a moment there where Sarah Morath had lost her semifinal match, and Dana White had told her that she would never be a star. And at that moment, I was really angry at the situation. I know Sarah very well; she's a very talented individual. But he said that she didn't have the look for it, or all this as well. She's a very talented individual. She made it to the semifinals of the tournament. It's hard to, you know, kind of blast that as well, but. You know, I think that there is that gender bias. There's that little bias there in terms of looks, and she's not a traditional, you know, model-looking person. in terms of looks. So I'm hoping at some point that we get to that point. I think Invicta's doing a lot in order to kind of change the spin that. To spin that off a little bit, these girls are athletes first and they're women second kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever caught one of the Invicta cards and see how they marketed it, but I think Shannon does an absolute great job of taking those first steps into what I think is going to be a revolution in terms of how women are marketed. But have you had the opportunity to see any of the marketing material that Invicta's done and what Invicta has been doing in terms of women's combat sports?
I've caught bits of it. It's a bit harder to see it over the side of the Atlantic, unfortunately. But it does pop off my radar now and then, and certainly the image is much more consciously departs from that whole. They called it Beauty and Strength for the Tough 20 campaign, didn't they? And they featured quite prominently in their marketing for that particular TV show. They had lots of this sort of posing and pouting and wearing dresses and so on in this promotional campaign. And yeah, it's nice to see something that's very different to that breaks away from that kind of mold.
Yeah, I mean it's great to be able to see that. I think you said Invicta's really doing a revolution in terms of how marketed and all that as well. So I'm interested to see what some of the academics have to say about that in terms of how they are in terms of that as well.
That's the direction for future research, I think.
Yeah.
No, now, I think just to round off on that, I think that it's an important criticism to make of a culture which sexualizes women athletes. But I think as you mentioned a moment ago, it's certainly not something that you can lay the blame at the feet of individuals, especially in a sport where individual marketability and then your ability to attract an audience and to be promoted is absolutely key to success. So you certainly can't blame the individuals who take advantage of that. But there's a good deal needs to change at the institutional level, I think, to make a decision that this is not how we're going to promote women in sport, in any sport, but certainly not in this relatively new avenue for women in sport. And decisions like that Invicta have made there, it's certainly to be applauded in terms of moving away from that kind of culture that rewards female athletes for what we would probably think of as the wrong reasons.
Now, this brings us to a question. Again, this is going to be a kind of a complicated one, but how much do you feel is that society wants what the media is giving us versus the media giving us what we think we want?
Right, yeah, so it's sort of a classic kind of chicken and egg situation with audience demand and the media supply. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, I mean, like I said, if the media changes, maybe we will see the society will change with it. And maybe if society says we want something different, that media will change and all that as well. I think both sides could use a little work. But I think that's the basic question. I mean, that's how society kind of changes. You know, if one side says one thing and then it kind of goes in a circular pattern. Well, we say one thing, and as we say another, and then it kind of flashes to a point where things start to change a little bit. Especially now, considering we're in the technological age, where petitions can be put online, and people across the world can get the word out relatively quickly. But and I think that's a big part of it too. Part of the reason why this female combat sports has become popular too is the fact that there's accessibility to it and there are fans that are connected to each other.
Yeah, absolutely. I do accept that point that social media has a very strong role to play in this kind of advocacy for change, and people like yourself and other people who run these kind of networking websites or bloggers or others who facilitate this kind of promotion and exchange of information and contact, it's vitally important. But I think as to your initial question there, it's difficult to say, that old society will say what it wants and then things will change, because of course society doesn't really speak with one voice. It's too big, it's too complex, it's too diverse to really have that kind of power to do that as an individual person. So in terms of who moves first, does the media decide to take a leap of faith and try and change the social discourse, try and change the narrative and put forward something new, or will they have to wait for social change before they can do that? I think that you've got to look at the number of people who are able to affect that kind of change and make a decision and say, right, this is the direction we're going to go in. And you're far more likely to see changes happen, at least at an immediate level, if it's a media executive who makes a decision that, okay, we're going to go this way. Because that's one person who's able to make a decision and perhaps, hopefully, kickstart some positive kind of change. And then the rest of society, they will catch on. They will eventually go along with it if it's given enough promotion, if it's presented in a way that's acceptable. I think we can see that happening right now, to come back to Ronda Rousey again, with the runaway success that she's having as a mainstream celebrity at the moment. It's just the other day that that rather infamous speech now that she made on one of the short sort of behind the scenes videos, the do nothing bitch thing, which I'm sure you and your listeners are familiar with. That was incorporated into one of Beyonce's songs at a gig she did, I think, at this weekend. So she's having a real impact as an outspoken individual through the media and through the promotion of her as an individual person, and that's being picked up on in other aspects of pop culture. And so we can start to see that having an impact, and that is perhaps shifting the mood. So I do think it starts with the media. I think it sometimes it requires a leap of faith, and sometimes it requires, you know, those unique individuals who are, who are able to attract such attention. But if it's a chicken and egg situation, I think it's the media first. They have to make that move and try and shape what we as a society will want to see from them.
Now, you know, you obviously, a lot of your research has to deal with your native UK, but I've heard stories of, you know, where certain places have yet to catch up with the rest of the world, like the United States and Brazil and Japan and a lot of these other countries that already have had female fighting for a very long time, for the past probably 10 or so years. Is that something that we're seeing a little bit more globalization in terms of countries and in terms of what is accepting in the country, or is it going to be something that is just some countries are going to take we're probably going to never really accept it, and some other countries are going to accept it very, very quickly?
Yeah, that's a good question, I think, and that's something that with the book, the title of the book is, of course, Global Perspectives on Women in Combat Sports, and we were really hoping for a broad global set of contributions, and we did get that in many respects. And what we can see is that there are, in lots of different countries, there are groups of women cultures, which exist, or subcultures which exist, where women are training, women are wanting to compete, but it's the way they're received by the wider society. Like you say, you've got some cultural settings like the UK, the US, and others, where there is a longer history of women fighting. There's also a longer history, perhaps, of women in sport in general, and there's more successful feminist movements, if you think more widely about gender and politics, that make the idea of a woman in a full contact fighting sport seem much more acceptable. And so when we do have these rather sudden big changes, like the inclusion of boxing in the Olympics for women at 2012, it's taken up quite happily, but that same sort of contextual stuff doesn't exist around the world in all different countries. And I think what we need to consider here is that, as well as the general sort of climate in many countries, and I don't want to be too specific here because I haven't done the research myself to say with any certainty, but certainly a lot of different countries around the world, they don't have that general acceptance of gender equality or that general aim to move towards gender equality that we have in many Western countries. And what's more, they tend to think of gender equality as a Western thing. And in the context of, sort of being on the defensive against cultural imperialism, it can be quite dangerous then for gender equality and for women's access to sports and for, other things like gay rights and other things that we might think of as being particularly important. It can be quite dangerous if that then becomes associated with Western culture in those other countries, because then they'll resist it all the more because it's sort of alien and it's not us and it's not for us. So I think that's one thing that, as we look to to see if this is spreading around the world and see how we can perhaps develop women's participation in combat sports elsewhere, need to be mindful of the fact that it runs the risk of being tarred with that kind of insinuation.
I'm reminded of two stories. One of them actually happened at the Olympics, the last Olympics, where there was I'm trying to remember what country it was. One of the Arab countries. And they didn't have hardly any female representation, and they got kind of got some flack for it. So they ended up bringing a couple of girls in, and one of them was a judoka, I believe. She competed. Obviously, she didn't, she wasn't placed or anything, but just to have the opportunity to be able to be able to do it. And she ended up, I think, having to compete in trying to remember the name of her endowment. But she ended up competing, and I remember that story distinctly, happening over there, over at the London Olympics. So that was very interesting in terms of the world saying, what the hell's going on? Why isn't there any females on your team? So that's kind of interesting to say the least.
It was taken up quite heavily in the UK press as well. It's a Saudi athlete. I don't know if I'm going to pronounce her name correctly, but I think it was Wadan Shehakani. And yeah, she didn't do too well. I think she was, her competitive level was not, perhaps as high as it could have been at that point. And the UK press nevertheless said, this is such a great achievement for women's rights in Saudi Arabia. And she was highlighted as this, this real symbolic icon But I don't think really that that it was received the same way in Saudi Arabia, for sure.
Well, what's kind of interesting too, on a side note to that, two of the top female athletes right now, one of them is actually fighting this weekend, Pani Khayanzad. Pani is actually, I think, originally from Iran, and she emigrated to, I believe it was the Netherlands, but she's doing very well for herself. And also Randa Markos, who is on the Ultimate Fighter 20, is from Iraq, I believe, and she emigrated to Canada. So it just goes to show you that there are women up there that are really, really talented in those countries. If given the opportunity and given the training, they could be considered world champions, you know, later on. So it's really interesting to say. But the other story I wanted to tell you was that I was at the International MMA Federation tournament a couple months ago, and I ended up meeting with three of the members from Team Italy, and I talked a little bit about, you know, we haven't seen very many female fighters from Italy, and now we're seeing three coming in to this tournament. And I asked, you know, what's the climate like there? And they said that we're starting the movement over there. You know, they're starting to accept that there is female fighters out there now. They say that, you know, obviously a lot of Catholics, you know, feel that, you know, the gender roles, you know, where, you know, women shouldn't be fighting or, you know, doing that as well. But I think that they said that they're starting to make waves over there just by stepping up and being them, you know, and being able to show up there. Showing up as fighters, and actually two of them ended up winning. The tournament, their respective tournament. So It was very interesting to see that they're kind of, you know, stepping up against convention, and they're showing that they can be successful in the sport. And it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact they have once they start getting on the world stage. I know one of them is turning pro within the next month or so. Strangely enough, she's fighting in South Africa. But it's interesting to be able to say, at least in terms of, you know, sometimes it's not just society, it's sometimes not the media, but sometimes it's just the person herself that steps up and say, hey, I'm going to do this, despite any kind of critics and that. And I applaud those girls for doing that too. So.
Absolutely. That sounds very similar to the situation in Poland. With respect to obviously Johanna Jędrzejczyk, who's now, you know, extremely successful thanks to her, you know, her UFC championship, and Poland equally, you know, it's very, very sort of orthodox, it's a Catholic country, but it's a very traditional, you know, in that sense of the term, orthodox country, where gender roles are, you know, quite clearly defined. I would imagine quite similar to the example of your Italian fighters there. And I've just actually been involved in another mini research project with Christopher, the co-editor of the book. And another colleague, a Polish colleague of ours, Honorata Jakubowska, and what we found in terms of looking at Polish media and the commentary on Jędrzejczyk before and after her two most recent UFC fights was very radically different to the way that female athletes are usually talked about in Polish media, and particularly when it comes to, you know, so-called masculine sports. And what we've concluded in looking at that is that in these kind of contexts, when women are when they're winning, particularly if they're winning world championships, they're bringing glory to their home nation, the whole sort of the way they're thought of changes quite quickly. So perhaps, you know, we need more women on the world stage, and perhaps more opportunities to compete and, you know, to win and to be winners and to represent their nation. And perhaps if that's, you know, that's seen more and more, then we might have sort of changing attitudes in countries which might have been maybe hostile or at least unwelcoming to female fighters before. But when they're given that opportunity, then, you know, things can change.
Yeah, I mean, when Joanna Calderwood started her career as an MMA fighter, you know, I had the privilege of interviewing her. I ended up doing a written interview with her, actually. But the reason why I interviewed her was the fact that she was planning on fighting for her MMA debut in Glasgow, and there was a local female politician that was against it. So Joanna had written a piece and said, you know, hey, you know, you don't know anything, you know, you don't knock it until you've come and seen what it's all about and all that as well. And she ended up convincing, changing the gal's mind. And we know Joanna's one of the top females now in the sport as well. So there's many different stories of how these women are kind of changing people's minds in terms of that as well. So so it's absolutely great to be able to hear that as well. Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to kind of, you know, figure out how everything's kind of going. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next decade in terms of how the female combat sport's going to change the world, how many countries. I mean, I see so many countries every year just jump on the bandwagon. We see fights almost, I just statistically from my end of things, it seems like every year we get 5 or 6 or 7 different countries that have started having female fights on their cards. It's been very fascinating to be able to say the least, especially in the MMA realm. I think in the boxing realm, I think things are kind of steady right now until we're waiting on kind of some kind of big break in terms of some of these promoters wanting to put females on the cards. I think a lot of it deals with the boxing promoters being old school and still haven't, there's kind of still set in their orthodox ways, you know, that girls aren't really entertaining to watch them fight, versus the MMA promoters who have been convinced that, yeah, women can actually fight and they're actually very exciting as well. So it's been interesting to see, at least in that dichotomy. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next decade and kind of to see where the social revolution will head, you know.
I think you've got a really good point about MMA there, and in terms of it, you know, it's, with its the fact that it's quite new, you know, as a sport, as a professional sport, it's really, you know, it's, you know, not more than 20 years really in terms of its, certainly since going mainstream in the early 2000s, it's still a very young sport, and with that in mind, there's not much set down in terms of those kind of traditional expectations of men and women, and, you know, like you said, a very orthodox perspective of perhaps some of the more old school boxing promoters. So I think it's a sport that's got fantastic potential really to make its own traditions now. You know, they don't have to necessarily be beholden to the old way of doing things, the old school way of doing things. And that, when it comes to women's involvement in sport, that's a great context for, you know, to be working in, to use that, you know, to get some good promotion going.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to be able to see. And like I said, I've been watching this kind of go on for the past 6 or 7 years. And, you know, it's just been unbelievable to see the kind of how much it's grown and how much the acceptance has grown in terms of these fighters globally in terms of that as well. I've also seen so many Muay Thai fighters that have seen both, you know, growth and seen a couple setbacks in terms of their roles as well. So it's been interesting to see a lot of the crossover and a lot of the things and where the opportunities lie and all that as well. So like I said, it'll be interesting to see in the next decade as well. Your book is available online. You guys can check that out as well. And actor Dr. Alex, let's see here.
Shannon.
Dr. Alex Shannon on Twitter. So you guys can check him out there as well and check out some of his stats as well. Any idea on in terms of maybe a follow-up book to this one? Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that we probably didn't cover this time around, but is that something you're considering?
It is, yeah. It's something we're considering. There's a nice little network now of academics who are in sort of generally interested in martial arts studies. And so you can find martial arts studies as well on Twitter if you're interested in the sort of wider academic discussion about various aspects of martial arts, from sort of traditionalist and movies and all kinds of different stuff that folk out there are interested in. And Christopher and I are definitely thinking about our future projects, and this is an area that we're both very keen on. So sort of watch this space. In the meantime, if any of your listeners are generally interested in academic research on this particular topic, I'd say if you do Google searches for either of us or for any of the named authors who've contributed to this particular book, then you know, you'll be able to find some of our other research as well, which might be worth having a little look at.
Yeah, the website I saw you was the Greenwich website, where they had the Greenwich University website, which actually has a couple of good papers on females' roles. I think one of them talks about Ronda Rousey as well, in terms of her marketing and the media using her sexuality as well. So you guys can check out that as well. So if you check out that on Google and search, you can be able to find some information about it as well. Anything else you want to add?
I think we've covered a great deal here. I'm not sure how many of your listeners work in academia or in education, but if you do, and you're looking for a teaching resource for any kind of sport-related courses, then we hope that the book, Global Perspectives on Women in Combat Sports, we'd hope that would be of interest to you. Any college students out there as well who are studying sports, sports science, sports studies, or indeed gender studies or sociology or women's studies, there's some stuff in that book that might be of value to you. So. Yeah, a little bit of a book plug, but I think that's all from me.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just to kind of follow up on that, I've noticed a lot. I think per capita, there's a lot more female fighters that have degrees than a lot of the guys do. You know, a lot of them, I think, have the forethought to think that, you know, our athletic lives aren't going to last forever, and we need to fall back on something. So I see so many of them that are taking up school, or a lot of them are still in school. They fight it, and they also take up classes as well. So I think, and academic wise, I think a lot of the female fighters will actually appreciate it, and I think even some of my listeners will be interested in kind of reading where, you know, from a scientific standpoint, where female fighting is heading in terms of sociology and kind of some of the stuff as well. I'm a little bit fascinated as well, so I'm really interested in you know, learning more a little bit about that as well. But thanks a lot for joining us, and like I said, hopefully that new book's coming out, and hopefully we can. You know, if you ever had any questions or any thoughts, just let me know, and I can help you out in that instance as well. So, best of luck to you.
Absolutely, yeah, I certainly will. And thank you very much for having me on. It's been very fun to chat to you about all this stuff.
That was Dr. Alex Shannon, everybody, from the University of Greenwich. Again, his book is named "Global Perspectives on Women in Combat Sports: Women Warriors Around the World." Like I said, if you look up Dr. Alex Channon, that's A-L-E-X-C-H-A-N-O-N, that's A-L-E-X-C-H-A-N-N-O-N, if you look up Dr. Alex Channon, you'll be able to find all that information on Google or Yahoo or wherever your search engine is. You'll be able to see some of his papers, and like I said, you can figure out where to purchase the book. You can also follow Dr. Channon on Twitter at Dr. Alex Chan, that's DralexChannon, that's DralexChannon, Dr. Alex Channon on Twitter. I believe we'll be back our usual time, Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. I don't know who we'll have on the show. I'll let you guys know. Please follow us on Twitter at Wombat Sports to check out what's going on there. Go to Wombat Sports on Facebook as well. And like I said, if you want to catch part one of our interview, please go to blogtalkradio.com/wombatsports, and you'll be able to listen to the first part of the interview, which is just as fascinating as the second one as well. We'll see you guys on Sunday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern.